Hi, welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio. Well, folks, in the second hour of today's show, it is a great honour for me to bring you Max Egan, internet alternative radio host, journalist and artist, well known to many of our listeners. And, of course, his website is thecrowhouse.com. If you haven't heard of Max Egan, please go and check out The Crow House and have a look at his radio show and a lot of work that he's done for a variety of causes that are really important in the world and for the issues of truth and justice. Today we are going to be talking a lot about the situation in Gaza, which is reaching the point of genocide, ethnic cleansing. It has gone way beyond anything that we've seen in the past, and we're going to be talking about that extensively, but we'll also be covering a lot of other issues if we can squeeze them in. So a warm welcome to Max Egan. Are you there, Max?
I certainly am. Thanks for having me on, brother.
Great pleasure to have you on, Max, and I know you've been doing so much for this cause, for the Palestinian cause, and you've been to Israel and you've been interviewing a lot of people on the ground in Gaza. Now, let's start with your assessment of where things are at and how this current phase of the conflict is different. It appears to be a new and much, much darker chapter in the whole Israeli-Palestinian conflict.
Exactly, and it is a very, very dark chapter, and it's very interesting that you use the word conflict, because it isn't a conflict. This is not a conflict. What it is an occupation. It's been a brutal occupation for 66 years, and Israel is basically stealing the last piece of Palestine, and they are carrying out a blatant act of ethnic cleansing against the Palestinian people that are trapped in Gaza. These people have been besieged and impoverished and trapped behind this wall for 7 years. They've been deprived of the most basic necessities of life. Even 90% of the water in Gaza is polluted. They can't trade, they can't fish, they can't do anything. They are trapped in a living hell, and they are subject to constant bombardment. Israel has actually been airstriking Gaza since April for no reason at all other than to provoke them. This conflict began because of three youths who were kidnapped and killed in West Bank, which has nothing to do with Gaza.
Yeah.
We didn't hear that actually just before that there were three Palestinian youths that were kidnapped and killed by Israelis. And when the Palestinians responded, which they shouldn't have, but someone apparently did. But interestingly, the people who did kill those Jewish teenagers were speaking Hebrew in the phone call that one of them made. One of them actually made a phone call, a distress call, when they were in the car being kidnapped. And you hear the gunshots of them being killed on the phone call, and mm-hmm. the killers were speaking Hebrew. So that's very interesting. And they've used it as an excuse to go in and bomb Gaza under the guise of defending themselves. But what they are doing is going out and carrying out a methodical ethnic cleansing. I was speaking to a friend of mine on the ground in there just a few minutes ago, and she said that Israel is deliberately targeting children. They're randomly shelling at everything. She said they cannot even list the number of dead or the number of whole families dead. They're taking out whole neighborhoods. They're just shelling random buildings, not bothering to empty them. They've just gone crazy. It's a bloodbath.
Yes, and I had to listen to that.
She's never seen anything.
I had to listen to your conversation there with her. Question
well, yeah,
about
it's shocking.
Yeah.
It's shocking, man. It's absolutely shocking. And people don't realize the importance of this issue. They're not paying attention to it, and they should.
I mean, this targeting of completely civilian buildings, how many hospitals, for example? There have been a number of hospitals that have been attacked, haven't there?
Yeah, they've blown up at least three hospitals. I think there's only three hospitals in Gaza. There might be more, but
yeah,
they've blown up three major hospitals, and they're blowing up ambulances on the way to pick up people. Ambulance, they shell an area, an ambulance comes along to collect the wounded, and they shell the ambulance. And then once people people got no ambulances, they all crowd to the hospital, and then they're dropping gas bombs on the hospitals. And what we're hearing from people like Benjamin Netanyahu and other Israeli spokespersons is that Hamas are using these people as human shields. This is simply not true. This is an act of mass ethnic cleansing. And if the world does not pay attention, there will be no survivors from Gaza Strip. And this is not some This isn't some random dictator somewhere. This isn't Rwanda. This isn't Panama. This isn't some dictator, Idi Amin, chopping up his people. This is a major world power, one of the members of G8, carrying out an act of brutal and blatant ethnic cleansing right under the eyes of the world, under the guise of self-defense. This is not acceptable. It's absolutely not acceptable. And the gloves have come off with this one. We've got to stand up and pay attention to this. We really do. And look, they're not just killing these people. They're using experimental weaponry to do it. They're using things such as dime munitions. Google that, folks. DIME munitions. These are dense inert metal explosives that send out micro shrapnel, which literally tear the flesh from your body. The wounds that the doctors are seeing in Gaza are the stuff of horror films. They're the stuff of nightmares. They've never seen wounds like this. And Gaza is a population of 1.8 million people. Yeah. Hemmed in by a 50-foot wall, there are about 500,000 women and 900,000 children in the Gaza Strip. And this is what these weapons are being used against. And we need to stand up and seriously pay attention, because if we don't, if we let them get away with this, then I really do seriously believe that the way of Palestine will be the way of the world.
I've seen
a
lot of
footage. If this is the standard
we're
going to be allowed to be set, you know what I mean? If this is the standard we're going to be allowed to be set, then that's where we're headed.
I've seen a lot of footage of people with these tiny shrapnel wound injuries. That may be the type of weaponry you're talking about. People with just their bodies are just peppered with little holes. It's quite horrendous to look at.
Those ones that are peppered with holes like that are actually usually from flechée grenades, flechée explosives.
Okay.
These
okay.
send out thousands and thousands of tiny little darts, little metal darts that are designed to penetrate and do horrible damage and be almost impossible to remove, because you get thousands of them in hundreds of them in each body. So it kills you very slowly, very painfully. These weapons are designed to inflict maximum pain on their victims. That's something else to remember. The dime munitions, if you were to look at some of what these do, these literally slice you in half. They will tear the flesh from your body. They'll expose your whole ribcage back to the skeleton on one side of your body.
My God.
Ridiculous. But they won't damage the furniture. They won't damage the house. They won't hurt the wall.
Oh, I see.
They only damage soft tissue. So these are absolutely brutal, brutal weapons, and this is what they're using. It's absolutely shocking. It really is.
Now, you alluded earlier to the possibility that some sort of false flag operation was in place with the capture of those and the murder of those Israeli teenagers. This is something I want to explore a bit in our conversation today, that the whole conflict seems to be dominated by memes that are incredibly deceptive, incredibly duplicitous. And I want to get into the topic of the Gaza rockets, because this is, of course, the major justification now. And in many ways, it works very well for the propaganda purposes of the Israeli government and for the mass media, for CNN and all the major media, because it looks very shocking when you see those Gaza rockets going up into the air with the white streaks behind them. They look quite terrifying, don't they? But what is the reality of those Gaza rockets? You know, what type of damage, you know, best case, can those Gaza rockets actually do?
They can put a hole in your roof, they can land on a road, and they can put probably a 2 or 3 foot hole in a road and make a black splodge on it. They don't explode. They will kill you if they land on your head, but otherwise they won't. They're skyrockets. And the response to these, and you've got to understand what these people have been put through, and this is their country. Their whole country has been systematically stolen from them over the last 66 years.
Yeah.
This is the last stronghold of Palestine. And it's absolutely outrageous, you know, and the world's watching on. And the propaganda where they're saying these are brutal terrorists, well, they're not, because I went into Gaza Strip in 2012 and checked it out, and they're not. And these rockets are just skyrockets. They're fertilizer-powered skyrockets. They pack fertilizer in the base of them, and they launch them from these little tripods that fit in the boot of your car. They're tiny little rockets.
Yeah.
They look impressive with the smoke. That's just a fertilizer trail. It's ridiculous. And these are the only weapons that they've got. And I would suggest that, I mean, a lot of this, I mean, you you've got to look at the actions of Israel. I mean, really, and the actions of Mossad, and who benefits from these rockets being fired into Israel all the time.
Well, this is what I'm very concerned about.
They never hit anything.
Yeah.
They never hit anything. They never do any damage. But, you know, it gives Israel the perfect excuse it needs to go and stomp on Gaza all the time. So who's really firing the rockets?
This is what I'm very concerned about, Max. And there's no one talking about it apart, you know, we're talking about it now. I've been talking about this on my show. There's no investigative journalism going on to really find out what is happening. What is the source of the conflict? How is it being engineered? It only benefits Israel to have this token resistance from Hamas. It benefits the Hamas and the Palestinians not at all. In fact, it's the opposite. It is the perfect pretext for the total crushing, ethnic cleansing, and, you know, the final liquidation of Gaza.
Exactly.
And it's reminiscent of the Nazi liquidation of the Warsaw Ghetto, isn't it? I mean, there is such incredible parallels here between Gaza and the Warsaw Ghetto in my mind. It's incredible, isn't it?
Only this is far, far more brutal. That's the thing. This is the most brutal assault on a civilian population like I've ever seen in my life, just because of the weaponry they're using.
Yeah.
The sheer damage and the pain that it inflicts, and it's a war against children. It's a population that's over half children.
This is
very, very sick. This is a huge blood sacrifice. I mean, Benjamin Netanyahu and this man is pure evil. I can't believe that he is doing this. And the soldiers that are doing it, how could you be a soldier and just be in there just randomly shelling any building that you can and shooting anything that moves? And that's what they're doing. But like Hamas was basically given power by Israel. I mean, Hamas was an organization that was formed a while ago, but it was basically reshaped and given the power that it's got now and put in place in Gaza by Israel.
Yeah.
Because there was no way to oust Yasser Arafat. So Yasser Arafat's government was Fatah.
Yeah.
So they created this opposition for Fatah. And what happened was the people in Gaza voted for Hamas because basically Hamas said, well, we will stop the checkpoints and we will stop Israel putting in settlements. Because that's what Israel does. It puts in settlements everywhere and basically steals the country from under your nose without making war on you.
Yeah.
Just comes into your country and builds a community. I mean, what's this? How do they do that? Oh, it's our right because this is our land. They firmly believe this. And that's how they've been stealing land from the Palestinians for the last 66 years. They've just been walking over the border and building settlements on their country and saying, well, now it's part of Israel. And you can't do anything about it because if you do or try to, then you're anti-Semitic.
Yeah,
it's a weird thing. It's this setup that they've got, but Hamas was put in place by Israel to offer this token resistance. And look, a lot of the people in Hamas are Palestinians from within Gaza who genuinely do want freedom and genuinely do want to do the right thing.
Yeah.
There was a military guy, the head of their military, who was actually brokering a peace and a truce. That would have seen a ceasefire, a complete ceasefire between both sides. And he was on his way to the meeting with Israel when Israel shot his car with a rocket, torpedoed him from a plane, missiled him from a plane.
Wow.
So that was the end of those peace talks. And they said, oh, well, he was a terrorist. Well, he was the head of Hamas military wing. We took him out. Yeah, we got rid of a terrorist. Well, did you happen to mention that he was actually the most moderate member of Hamas and he was the one that was brokering a peace deal and he was on his way to the meeting? That's how you knew where he was to take him out.
We're just going to break, Max. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. I'm talking to Max Egan. We'll be right back after this break. Don't go away. Very important show. Listening to Truth News Radio Australia, going beyond the spin, deception and propaganda of mainstream news. Visit truthnews.com.au and subscribe now. Welcome back, you're with Truth News Radio Australia. My guest today is Max Egan. Max is a well-known alternative media broadcaster. He's also an artist, and his website is thecrowhouse.com. And he is talking about Gaza with me today. Max has been on the line with a lot of people in Gaza. He's been a supporter of Gaza and the Palestinian cause for many years. And I'd like to actually ask you, Max, what your experiences have been. You went to Gaza recently. Can you tell us anything about that?
Well, yeah, actually, it's quite interesting, and it is a good continuation on from what I was just saying about Hamas. Because I've actually had experience with them because I was arrested while I was in Gaza because I entered the country illegally.
Okay.
So the interesting thing is that you get a sanitized version of everything everywhere you go. You know, if you go to Gaza as a delegate or whatever, of course they will show you what they want you to see. And it's the same with any type of delicate situation that you go into. If you were to go to Israel and visit Israel, they will show you what they want the Westerners to see. It's the same thing in any country, in any totalitarian regime. You can do it in South Korea. You can do it anywhere in China. They will show you what they want you to see always.
Sure.
And Gaza has always been this fascination for me ever since I was a child. It's been in the news since I was a kid. And when I heard the word Gaza when I was about 8 or 10 years old, it was a mystical word to me, a magical word, you know. So it's always played on my mind. I've got this thing about Z's. Mm. I was into Frank Zappa as well. So, you know, it's just this thing, Gaza, it's just this word, you know. And when all this happened and I had an opportunity to go in there, well, we thought, well, we'll just go in there because that way we don't get the sanitized version. Now, the person that I went in with was a guy called Ken O'Keefe, who was actually on the Mavi Marmara. And he went into Gaza on that aid mission. They got arrested by Israel, all sorts of stuff. People died.
Okay.
It was in 2010, trying to break the blockade. So he actually had the key to the city of Gaza. And he thought, well, hang on, look, maybe we can just sneak into the country. After all, I've got the key to the city.
Right.
You know, so
yeah.
We thought, okay. So he contacted some rebels, and these were teenagers, these kids. And they took us to this secluded building on the Rafah border, and these are beautiful kids.
Yeah.
And they dug this little tunnel. We crawled 50 meters underground.
Really?
Through this little tunnel. Over an hour and a half it took us to get through this tunnel. And we came out into this blown-up hellhole of Rafah on the Gaza side. The town of Rafah is right on the border.
Yeah.
Half is in Egypt and the other half is in Gaza. And we saw this. They smuggled us out to a safe house, and then they got us into Gaza City. And then we rented a hotel, a five-star hotel, which is about 2-star because it's Gaza.
Sure.
We stayed there the night, and then we went and rented a unit and hung out for 10 days and just hung around Gaza Strip for 10 days, entered the country illegally and hung around for 10 days. I was walking around town with a video camera and all sorts of stuff. Now,
sure.
Get this. We went out of this hotel, and I was just walking down the street with my suitcase. And I'm walking down the street with my suitcase sort of wheeling it behind me. It's sort of a handle and a wheel, like I just got off an airplane.
Yeah.
And I'm walking along the esplanade of Gaza, and there's Hamas on the other side of the road. It's like Hamas on a deck chair every 50 meters. There'd be a cop, you know, sitting there with a Kalashnikov AK-47. And you think, that's interesting garb for a cop, you know. And this is Hamas, and they were everywhere. And I'm walking down the street, and they're just leaving me alone. They didn't bat an eyelid when I passed. We rented a unit. And we thought, well, we better make videos, and we started posting videos on YouTube. And I'm running around the country, running around Gaza with a video camera, going out to the Ministry of Detainees and interviewing people and just getting the feel on the street. I'm going, well, where's all the terrorists? Where's all the terrorists here? You know, I thought this was a hotbed of terrorists.
Yeah.
You know, because I thought if I go in there, I won't get the sanitized version. They won't show me the safe version. And if I get in trouble, well, I get in trouble. But I just felt safe about it. I didn't feel under threat any time at all that I was there. And even going in there, Ken was dubious about entering this tunnel. And I went, well, we're here now. What are we going to do, go back? Let's go. And went straight in. And I never felt in danger the whole time I was there. But what happened was Hamas actually found out we were there, of course, because we were posting videos on YouTube. And they came and confiscated our passports and kept them for 6 days until it was time for us to leave.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we got to the border, they said, well, look, you're going to have to come and we want to talk to you before you go through the tunnel. You're going to have to go out through our tunnel because we can't let you leave through Rafah Crossing because you'll get arrested by Egypt.
Mm-hmm.
So they said, well, we'll let you use one of our tunnels to get out. This is Hamas, the terrorist organization, right?
Sure.
We're random strangers. We entered their country illegally through a tunnel that they don't know about.
Yeah.
Right? And we're running around the country with a video camera.
Yeah.
I mean, if I did this in Israel, what do you think they'd do to me? And this is this terrorist organization. We've got to the border and we're about to enter this tunnel. And they say, well, hang on, you've got to come and talk to the guy who runs the tunnels. And so they put us back in the car. They've taken this compound. And there's this guy, he's there, he's got a Kalashnikov, and he's looking at us going, who are these guys, you know? And they take us into this compound, then we go into an inner compound, and then this big metal gate closes, and I'm sitting there thinking, this is interesting. This is like a small prison compound.
Yeah.
This is an interesting place to be. But I didn't feel in fear.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, well, this is fascinating. Okay, we get out of the car, we walk into the office, and suddenly there's Ken O'Keefe and myself and this guy we had, Omar, who was acting as a translator for us. And these five Hamas, and they've all got AK-47s, Kalashnikovs, the black outfits, the berets, and they're saying, okay, we need to know where the tunnel is that you came in.
Okay.
This is a tunnel we don't know about, and we need to know where all the tunnels are. If people are coming and going from this place without us knowing, it isn't a good thing.
Mm.
You know, plus, you come into the country here, and you're unannounced, and you know, this is a dangerous place, and if you get hurt, then it looks bad for us.
Sure.
So you shouldn't do this. Can I see some ID from you? And we pulled out our passport, showed him. Okay, we put them in his pocket. And I thought, oh God, there goes my passport again. And then they said, well, you're going to show us where this tunnel is. And we're going, well, no, we don't know where it is. And they're interviewing us in Arabic for like four hours through the translator.
Yeah.
And while we're doing this, Ken is getting quite agitated, Ken O'Keefe, and he's getting quite belligerent with these Hamas. He's swearing.
Mm.
He's saying, we don't know where your effing tunnel is. Mm. We don't know. This is effing ridiculous. This is going to take too long. We've got to get to Cairo, rah, 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 you know, all this sort of stuff. I'm looking at him going, this is interesting. This is an interesting way to be talking to this Hamas terrorist organization, you know. And while this is going on, another guy, one of the Hamas, walks out, and he comes back in and offers me tea and bickies, brings in some wafer biscuits. And so I'm sitting there drinking tea and bickies with Hamas, and Ken's sort of swearing at them and saying, you're messing us around, we need to go. And they're just kind of being really nice to us, you know.
Mm.
And at the end of it all, they ended up turning to me and saying, well, what do you know about all this in perfect English?
Okay.
And I said, hey, I'm just an Australian, I'm just an Aussie, I just come along to have a look.
Mm.
You know, I just check the place out, as you do, you know. They just kind of smiled at me.
Sure.
Meanwhile, they'd sent the cab off and lost our luggage, right? So our luggage is gone. We've been delayed for 5 hours.
Yeah.
And so then they take us back to this. They say, well, look, we're going to take you to you're going to have to come in the car with us, and you can retrace your steps. We'll take you back to the center of town where you got the cab into Gaza from, and you can retrace your steps back to the tunnel.
Hmm.
And I'm going, we're going, this is ridiculous. This is where Ken starts swearing, saying, no, this is ridiculous. We'll never find it. So they take us out to this Humvee. Big black Humvee. I open the back door and say, get in the back of the Humvee. I open the back door and there's this AK-47 on the back seat.
Mm.
And I said, do you want me to keep the gun in the back with me, or would you like to keep that in the front with you?
Mm.
And he just went, oh, sorry. And he grabs the AK off the back seat. So they've opened the door. There's AK there. I mean, So these aren't terrorists. They were very, very nice to me, you know.
Mm.
And they've driven us around town trying to look for this tunnel. We ended up not being able to find the tunnel. So they said, oh, look, we're sorry we delayed you for 5 hours. So because we've delayed you, we won't and because we've lost your luggage, we won't charge you the $100 to go through the tunnel. You can go through for free. And they walked us through, gave us our passports back on the other side and said, look, sorry we lost your luggage, but it's 5 o'clock now in the afternoon. And we don't really trust your driver because it's getting late and nighttime's not a good time to cross the Sinai Desert.
Yeah.
And we think you should take one of our drivers because he'll get you back to Cairo safely and get you through all the checkpoints.
Okay.
We don't know if your driver will.
Yeah.
And if you want to leave your driver with us, we'll find your luggage and send it after and he can deliver it to you in Cairo. So not only did they provide us a driver back to Cairo, but then they sent our luggage along after us. So that was my experience with Hamas, the terrible terrorist group, after I broke into their country illegally and ran around with a video camera for 10 days. So,
yeah, they seem very polite. They seem pretty civilized. I mean, obviously they're being a little bit officious and they're depriving you of a bit of freedom, but they obviously did it in a fairly restrained way.
Well, we broke into their country. I think they were very nice to us.
You know? Yeah. We are going to break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. My guest is Max Egan. and we're talking about Gaza, and we'll be getting back into that topic after the break, so stay with us. Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia, talking to my guest Max Egan about the situation in Gaza. Max, your account there of that trip was interesting. At the time that you visited, I assume it was fairly quiet at that time. There wasn't too much hostility going on at that time. Did you witness anything?
Well, there were rockets that landed in northern Gaza, big rockets, not little Hamas rockets.
Oh, really?
Big rockets that took out buildings. Israel does that all the time. They bomb Gaza quite frequently. While we were there, there was a rocket attack in northern Gaza. It wasn't in northern Gaza City. It would have been just north of the city. We were reasonably near the north end of the city where we were staying. And we were on the beachfront. We could see Israel from where we were. We could see the big port. And the power station, using all of Palestine's power and shipping all their resources away.
Yeah.
But there was a rocket attack there. I did wake up one morning and there was a Israeli gunboat offshore shooting fishermen that had gone out too far. The zone was supposed to be 3 kilometres or 3 miles.
Yeah.
They're not allowed to shoot any more than 3 miles offshore, and there's no fish there. This guy was only about half a mile offshore. But an Israeli gunboat was there and it machine gunned the fishing boat anyway, killed 3 guys in the fishing boat. Palestine didn't respond to any of these attacks.
Really?
And again, with what I was saying about Hamas, I mean, these were very nice, these people that I dealt with. But, of course, there is a rogue element of Hamas that fires rockets. So you've got to ask, where does this come from?
Of course,
where does this come from?
You do.
And a lot of the other bad element that was in Gaza was the Islamic Jihad. These guys with the black turbans and all this sort of stuff. But these are actually Egyptians, part of the Egyptian Brotherhood, that are hiding in Gaza. This isn't part of Palestine as well. The people of Gaza, the people of Palestine, have got nothing to do with any of this stuff. You know what I mean?
You know something I find incredible, Max, with the knowledge we now have of history and the information that's out there, that people still find it so hard to grasp the fact that empire builders use the divide and control tactic of actually, harnessing the enemy to justify their own actions. And there are so many examples of it. One example is the IRA. I mean, it's now proven that elements of the IRA were being run by MI5. And they were doing it because it was part of the strategy for controlling the whole situation. And there were terrorist acts that were done by groups that were being handled by MI5. And, of course, in Europe we had Operation Gladio going on for decades, which was run by various governments, Italian government and the CIA, setting up terrorists to commit acts that could then be used as justifications for the strategy of control. And yet when you bring this up, and if you were to bring this up among people who get their news from the ABC or from the BBC or from CNN, they'll look at you like you're some kind of maniac for suggesting that this might be going on in Israel.
Yeah, absolutely. It's amazing because it's the A word, anti-Semitic. They've got it set up that way. If you criticize Israel for its war crimes, you get called anti-Semitic, which, of course, is ridiculous. But that's the situation that we're facing with this. But what's going on in Gaza is a blatant ethnic cleansing. It really is. If the people of the world don't pay attention to this, then there will be no survivors from Gaza Strip. And the only people who are going to stop it is us, the people themselves. And this is why we're seeing so much rhetoric everywhere else. This is why the plane was shot down in Ukraine. This is why another plane has just been shot down in Africa. They're doing this to distract people. We've got all the war rhetoric going on here. They're going to send troops now to Ukraine. We don't even know who shot that plane down. And when I look at the carnage being wreaked in Gaza at the moment, I wouldn't be surprised if Mossad had a lot to do with it. I mean, this is something people have to face. I mean, Israel has held the world at ransom for far too long with the word anti-Semitic. You're not allowed to criticize anything Israel does because it's anti-Semitic, and this is simply not acceptable anymore, especially with the carnage that we're seeing in Gaza. We have to pay attention to this. Nobody else is going to. These people are absolutely desperate, and they're good people. And even when you look at the whole conflict, the whole problem with the Muslims, where did this come from? You know, well, Muslims, it is actually a peaceful religion. Muslim extremism, Islamic extremism, was fostered by the United States. It was fostered by books that were written in Pennsylvania University, and it was spread out to the Mujahideen to radicalize them to fight Russia. That's where radical Islam came from. And it's been a setup. It's been created to create the enemy that they need. But the people that I met in Gaza are beautiful, beautiful, peaceful people.
Yeah.
They don't want any war. And there's Christians in Gaza as well. There's a large Christian population in Gaza. Yeah, I saw a building that was on the corner of one street, and one side of it was a mosque and the other side was a church. And they pray together.
Wow.
I mean, this is not, you know, these people lived in peace for thousands of years. They babysitted each other's children. The Muslims, the Christians, and the Jews babysitted each other's children as recently as 1946, right up until the Europeans came down and created the State of Israel and began ethnically cleansing the Palestinians, which they've been doing for 66 years. And this is the final blow. And if they get away with this, just ethnically cleansing this whole Gaza Strip right in front of the world, then they'll get away with anything. And it'll be a test run because of the standards that they're setting with this. Benjamin Netanyahu actually said on TV the other day that it's morally right, it's morally justifiable that to kill a terrorist. We cannot let the terrorist believe that he can be safe just by hiding in the civilian population. It's our moral duty to kill the terrorist even if he's in a civilian population, regardless of the damage to the civilian population. This is basically what he's saying with this. So anybody who is protesting the government can be a terrorist, and they'll just come in and take out the whole neighborhood. They really will. And if we don't pay attention to this, the way of Palestine will be the way of the world. And as I said, they're not just killing these people, my brother. They are killing them with the weapons of nightmares. They are making sure they do maximum damage and maximum pain to
horror.
900,000 women and children, and this is just not acceptable. 900,000 children, 500,000 women, and it's a humanitarian disaster. It's not just an act of crime against the Palestinians. It's a crime against humanity.
Absolutely.
Because this is the absolute murder of innocents, and it's not acceptable. And like I said, it isn't some random country. It isn't Panama. It isn't Rwanda. It isn't Idi Amin. This is a major Western democratic nation, a member of G8, one of the world leaders, and it's getting away with genocide. And it's been supported by all of our governments. They're not saying anything. And that would indicate that all of our governments condone ethnic cleansing. And that is a very, very dangerous thing for us to have to deal with. I think that every government that is supporting this, they all need to be held accountable for their actions. Any government that hasn't stepped in by now needs to be as guilty as Israel as in the war crimes that are being committed. This is simply not acceptable. And it's not even debatable whether this is a war. It's not. It's ethnic cleansing, pure and simple. It has been from the very start.
Now, Max, in your interview with the lady that I listened to today, you said that you are going to be going in with a team. I'm keen to know more about that. And there's an ad on your website, Stop the Massacre, Gaza Shield, an international delegation of activists to Gaza. Can you tell me more about that?
Well, what I've tried to organize, it was going to be a human shield operation. I was coordinating with a group called the International Solidarity Movement, but they actually sent some people in. I'm not sure whether it was the International Solidarity Movement or the Palestinian Solidarity Movement sent some people in as human shields, and they just Israel just shot them all. They don't care about human shields.
Okay.
An interesting thing you should look at as well that's on my website is an article that I've written, a manifesto for the planned ethnic cleansing of Gaza Strip.
Mm.
There is a document there that appeared in the Israeli Times or the Israeli News where they outline exactly what they're doing. They are going in and actually conquering the Gaza Strip with absolutely no regard for anything else but a minimal loss of life to Israelis, which means they're going to be using everything. They're going to be using all sorts of banned weapons. And this is what they do. They use banned and chemical and experimental weapons. They try them out on the Gazans all the time. They're always taking experimental weapons in there. They shoot a few rockets over. And this is, again, you know, like a lot of the people that are shooting the rockets over, these are Israeli agents, because the only people who benefit from sending these rockets into Israel is Israel, because the rockets don't hit anything, they don't kill anybody, especially they cannot do any damage.
Especially, you know, that they don't have warheads. I mean, that's, to me, a red flag that this is not genuine, because why would you bother launching a rocket if you don't put a warhead on it? It's kind of pointless.
Exactly, and it's powered by a chunk of fertilizer in the bottom, so they go right up in the air like that, but they don't go very far. They go up and they fall down. And Israel lets off all of these air sirens all the time and pretends it's under attack all the time. And the people in Gaza suffer, and it's a lie.
Absolutely. Okay, we're just going to break. We've got you for one more segment. You're with Truth News Radio Australia, and I'm talking to my guest, Max Egan. And I think we're going to get into some Australian topics when we come back from the break. If we've got time, we'll be right back. Stay with us. Truth News Radio, and I'm talking to Max Egan today. Max, I want to talk to you a bit about the Australian landscape. There's a few topics I want to just try and quickly cover, because I want to get your take on it, right? I know you're a compassionate man, and I know you don't fall into typical kind of pigeonholes of the left or the right. You know, you're kind of like me. You see the world holistically. My views are often, I find that I'm hated by some people who would otherwise identify with me, but because I am an individual, I don't follow the groupthink on any topic. So I get a lot of different reactions to some of the things that I say. One quick question I want to get is your perspective on the refugee question in Australia, just that the whole sort of scandal, the whole situation, the whole crisis over refugees and the government's policies towards refugees in Australia. What's your take on all that?
Look, I think it's disgraceful. I really do. I think these people are desperate, desperate people that have travelled through the most perilous of circumstances to find a better life somewhere, because it was they would have died certain death where they were. I mean, think about it. If you got on a – would you take your family and jump on some leaky boat and just take off across the ocean not knowing where you were going to go? How bad would it have to be where you lived to do that? And then we bring them here and we lock them up in a concentration camp in the middle of a stinking hot desert.
Yeah.
Children, women and children, been there, spent their whole lives, born in the concentration camp, growing up in the concentration camp, middle of nowhere, living in virtually tin sheds. It's absolutely inhuman. And we are a very large country. We've got plenty of room in this country. The world is not overpopulated. Yeah. We're always just badly managed, and it's done deliberately. Drive from Sydney to Melbourne and look around you, glance around you at all of that empty space as you're driving through, and tell me the world's overpopulated. It's not. It's just that people are crammed into cities, and we're built to make everything to break, so we're constantly trashing the landscape all around us. You know, it's a scam.
The problem to me, it seems to me, is that we are continually being distracted from the real issues. And this is, of course, done by the media and done by the government. There is a problem with immigration. I think there are far too many people being brought in under the government's official policies that are undermining our quality of life, that are basically devaluing the Australian workforce. This is a problem. On the other hand, people who are coming here as refugees are such a tiny fraction of that. I mean, it's like there's at least 200,000 people every year being brought in under official government policies. And there's maybe 10,000 or so refugees. In a really big year, there might be 15,000. And yet all we ever hear about is there's a terrible problem with refugees. Isn't that somewhat ironic?
Well, it is. It is. And there's this, I mean, all these people, you could put them anywhere. They'd be happy anywhere. They just want to be alive. That's it. I mean, you could put them, they could develop all of the certain areas around Western Australia or whatever, and we form new villages, all sorts of stuff. But, oh, no, they might be terrorists. They might be terrorists. So there's all of this sort of stuff going on. This whole evil Muslim. What if they're Muslims? Oh, my God, they might be Muslim. Muslim terrorist community building in Western. Oh, my God. You know, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. It's fear, fear, fear. Yeah. Absolute manipulation. Yeah, and it's all distraction. All of this stuff is distraction from the real issues. Everything they give us on the media is a distraction from the real issues. And that's what I was saying about these plane crashes. I mean, that's what they were. They were distractions. They were distractions from what's going on in Gaza. Absolutely. And bloody Tony Abbott flexing his muscles with Ukraine. I mean, it's unbelievable.
Incredible. And also, you know, going head-to-head with Vladimir Putin, you know, acting like the tough guy. Australia has no position to be doing that. What the hell? I mean, we're a country on the other side of the planet that, you know, is not, we're not geopolitically affected by Russia and Ukraine. There's Tony Abbott standing up and almost creating a diplomatic incident, almost creating like a war scenario. That's what I saw Tony Abbott doing.
He's an imbecile. He's a complete and utter imbecile. He defies analysis. He's such an imbecile, what does he think we're going to do? See, but he'd love to be a big military nation. He'd love to be spending billions and billions of dollars and turn Australia into another huge military might like America.
Yeah,
he'd love to do something like that. He's that sort of a guy, you know. He's got a real problem, Tony Abbott. It's just stupid, really, I suppose, but. He's a dangerous man because, I mean, the power in the hands of such an imbecilic person is a dangerous thing, and Australia needs to watch out for that. I mean, and he's supporting this ethnic cleansing in Gaza. He's not even talking about it. Nobody's talking about it. None of our governments are talking about this.
No condemnation, not even criticism. I don't think I've even heard a criticism. Like, it's just been incredible.
It's unbelievable, and you don't have to be Muslim to be pro-Gaza. You just have to be pro-human.
Yeah.
Either you condemn this or you're anti-life. It's as simple as that because the way they're killing these people, this Netanyahu government doesn't just hate them. This government despises life, the way it's treating these people. This is not human. Yeah. This is absolutely not human, you know.
Now, of course, I was initially pleased when Tony Abbott was elected for one reason. I wanted to see the carbon tax gone, and I'm at least glad that's happened. What's your take on the carbon tax?
Oh, smokescreen.
Yeah.
Smokescreen. I mean, it's a joke. It doesn't do anything. It's ridiculous. It's another distraction.
Do you think the repeal of the carbon tax is at least one small positive thing that we've achieved? I mean, given that the Liberals and the Labor are not representing our interests generally, but in this particular case, it was a result of mass public opinion. It was democracy in action that led first to Malcolm Turnbull being overthrown as the leader of the Liberals, and then ultimately Tony Abbott coming in, really because the people were lied to by Julia Gillard about that tax, and we didn't want it, and now at least it has been repealed. That's something to feel positive about in the sense that there is some sort of democracy, maybe.
Or perhaps, Tony Abbott is the only psychopath that we have who's actually psychopathic enough to want to go to war with Russia and send troops to Ukraine and build up Australia's military might. So little puppet Gillard put in the carbon tax so little puppet Tony could come in and repeal it so he could start World War III as well, because he's right into that sort of stuff, you know. So all the world is a stage, and I think it's all theatre. The problem with voting for the Liberal government to get rid of the carbon tax is that the leader of the Liberal government was Tony Abbott.
Yeah.
Why would someone vote for Tony Abbott? Tony Abbott is an imbecile. He's a complete and utter imbecile. And not only that, he's a very dangerous imbecile. He's a lunatic. He has no respect for anybody. He's a textbook sociopath. Mm. So I could not understand why anybody would vote for Tony Abbott. Personally, I don't vote at all.
Yeah.
I think that if you vote, you are simply supporting organised crime. A vote for the Australian government, for any member of the Australian government, it means you approve of the government stealing from your friends, you approve of it lying to you and controlling the media, enslaving you to a system of debt slavery, going to war with other countries, funding this ethnic cleansing in Israel, and all of these things. It's simply supporting organised crime, a vote for government. And so I do not vote. I will have nothing to do with these criminals. The criminal cabal, euphemistically referred to as the Australian federal government, as with every other government that is supporting this Holocaust in Palestine right now.
Is there any part of the sort of political process that you would, you know, endorse? Are there any political parties that you think you have merit, even though you don't vote, as you say? But I mean, do you think that the process can be rescued?
Well, the process can be rescued. I mean, a lot of people are presenting new systems and stuff. I mean, we've got Michael Tellinger traveling around at the moment presenting the Ubuntu system and all this sort of stuff. I personally don't think people will go for these sorts of things. I think that the system could work if we operated according to moral parameters rather than legal parameters. Mm-hmm. If laws are put in place which cause you to deviate from your moral compass or cause harm to people, then not only should these laws be disregarded, but the people who enact them should be held accountable. We need a shift in consciousness to change things. We really do. If we were to shift our consciousness and step into our divine masculine and start doing the right things in all that we did and change our perspective of how we interact with people, the system would change with us. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, we wouldn't have to build a new system. It would be an organic process. There's no good trying to create a new structured thing and give it to the world and say, well, look, let's all just step out of this and step into this, because it's not going to happen. People aren't going to do that, and we don't really need to structure anything anyway. It should be an organic thing. What we need to do is change the way we treat each other. That's what we have to do. If we do that, then we wouldn't be seeing this horrible ethnic cleansing in Gaza. You know, we wouldn't be allowing this if we respected ourselves and respected each other. It just wouldn't happen, you know. So I don't think we have to recreate anything. And as for political parties, I mean, it's hard to say. I've yet to see a political party that has offered the truth to the people and offered a way out to the people. Mm. You know, I've only seen political parties that may mean well, but once they get within that legal system and they start following what it says in these books, it's all over, because the books themselves is where the corruption is. So we need a restructuring of our thinking, really, to get this off the ground. We really do.
Yeah, and you know, it's an individual thing.
If I do see one party that presents a solution and a way out, well, yeah, support them, but I honestly haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, I think I tend to agree with you. There's nothing that certainly jumps out. I've given some support to the climate skeptics, because I thought that they seemed to be people who were admittedly focused on one major issue, but they seem to be doing it in a general way. Clive Palmer, well, he's a businessman, and Lord only knows what his agenda is. It was quite strange seeing him on the stage with Al Gore.
Say no more.
Yeah, it's very, very hard to make out what's going on there. That there may be some spin-off benefits from that, not because he's a good guy, not because the system is in any way improved, but just that you've got different people. I think more independent people, even the ones that are aligned with extreme power and wealth and influence, at least having different people on the scene can help. But I think what you've said, the individual effort, the individual awakening, and the individual awakening to your own power and potential, that's where we've got to focus.
We do. But look, we've got to go, obviously, but I want to say before I go, the importance of Gaza. You've got to write letters to your politicians. We've got to make a lot of noise about Gaza. Otherwise, there will be no survivors. They're depending on the people of the world to save them, and we are the only ones who will. And if we don't, then the way of Palestine will be the way of the world.
Thanks, Max. We've got to leave it at that. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We'll be back next week. Thanks for listening, folks.